Well, let's go back to the story of the cracked pot, about the person with two pots suspended from a pole, balanced across their shoulders, carrying water in two pots, one that is perfect and a cracked one that drips out half the water. Do you remember how it ended with the water carrier showing the cracked pot how the wildflowers were growing only on the side of the path over which it hung as the load was carried up the hill to the mistress's home? Well, I had cut the story short, or at least the widely available version of it, and let me tell you how it ended. When the cracked pot agonizingly apologized the second time for wasting half the water carrier responds, "I have always known about your flaw, and I took advantage of it. I planted flower seeds on your side of the path, and every day while we walk back from the stream, you've watered them. And for 2 years, I've been able to pick these beautiful flowers to decorate my mistress's table." The water carrier never acknowledged the cracked pot's discomfort and even takes advantage of it to make herself look good to the boss. And the cracked pot feels badly about itself for 2 long years. So badly that it doesn't even notice the pretty flowers growing by the path it passes. That would lead to discouragement, if not depression, wouldn't it? And might even make the pot crazy? I hope you don't blame me for not telling the whole story to the children. And in reality, there are no perfect pots. Some of us carry water better than others, it is true, but each of us is imperfect, and we all have the potential to bring flowers to bloom somewhere, somehow, sometime. Last January, I was in Philadelphia to attend the memorial service of a man in his late 50s. The people who passed him on the street before he died may well have regarded him as a crackpot. Not a cracked pot. But as we learned that evening, Bart had caused many flowers to bloom over the years. You see, Bart had schizophrenia. He looked like a homeless person with unkempt hair and clothes. He often sat out on a park bench in Rittenhouse Square in downtown Philly and frequented a trendy coffee shop nearby. He had his own table in the corner there where he drew and painted and sometimes could be heard wailing inconsolably or laughing oddly without apparent reason. He often traded his artwork for a cup of coffee or for money to get home on the train or bus to the apartment his family provided. He'd be out of money, even though they gave him enough for food and transportation. It's just that he couldn't keep track of what he didn't spend on cigarettes, his only addiction. I'd met Bart only once, the previous month, when he was already dying, afflicted with cancer. My husband Don and I had driven to Philadelphia to keep Bart's brother and his sister-in-law company while they cared for him in his last days. Had I not known of Bart for the 30 years prior, while I'd been their friend, I might have thought askance of him too. But I knew and saw for myself that weekend that he was beloved, and also had required their care and evoked their worry for so long in ways that most brothers do not. I tell you this story because of what happened at the memorial event. It was held at the coffee shop that had been Bart's hangout for the 16 years since it opened. You'd think that the owners would have found him to be a liability, a turnoff to their customers and sent him packing when he showed up. They hadn't for all those years. What's more, they opened the coffee shop after hours for the memorial event and provided the refreshments. It was packed with people who'd come to celebrate Bart's life. Word had gone out that people should bring any of his artwork in their possession for an impromptu art exhibit, and they did. And so the walls were hung with beautiful, colorful, abstract art, exhibiting real talent, I thought. After a brief welcome by our friend, Bart's brother, the microphone was offered to anyone who wished to speak. One by one, people stepped up. Some were people he'd met at the coffee shop. Many of them were young artists whose talents and confidence Bart encouraged through times of indecision or discouragement. Some were people with whom he'd been in a Christian Bible study for years, although he was Jewish. They recounted how he could read and speak Hebrew and recite by memory passages from both the Hebrew and Christian scriptures, brilliantly relating them to their discussion topic or the times. Others knew him from the apartment buildings in which he'd lived in younger, somewhat better years. Several sang a favorite song. Many spoke of him reverentially as a deeply spiritual figure, someone who loved them unconditionally. For me, among the most memorable of the speakers was a woman who showed a beautiful painting by Bart, which she had had framed, and told the story of how she acquired it. One day, that fall, she was hurrying through Rittenhouse Square on her way home from work, when a familiar voice rang out behind her, calling her name several times. She turned and saw it was Bart, who she'd known from the Bible study, but hadn't seen in some time. "Wait, wait," he called. When he caught up, he said breathlessly, but with joy in his voice, "It's a miracle, it's a miracle." "What's a miracle, Bart?" "You are." "How am I a miracle?" "I was just praying and praying to see someone I knew, and here you are." "Why were you praying to see somebody, Bart?" "I need bus money." Many in the room that night laughed knowingly, not surprised. "Will you buy this painting?" He thrust it out to her, and she honored him by looking it over, knowing full well she would help him out regardless. But it was beautiful, and she told him so. They made the exchange, painting for bus money, and went about their ways. In closing, she said, full of heart, "I didn't know he'd become so ill, and I'm so sad he's gone. I want to thank him for teaching me what it feels like to be a miracle." Eventually, family members spoke. They thanked everyone for gathering and explained with their hearts wide open how amazing the evening had been for them. Through the stories told, they came to know about how Bart had lived his life and how he had loved and been loved by people they had never met. The Bart they knew had been a recluse at family gatherings, had a brilliant mind, and was artistically gifted, but was sometimes difficult. He was someone who had been their care and concern for many years. That night, they learned he had caused many flowers to bloom. And don't we all want to know what it feels like to be a miracle? I'd like to invite you to find in your teal songbook number 1053, and remain seated, but sing along.
Thank you.
Unitarian Universalist congregations provide acceptance, comfort, and support for us all, including people with mental health challenges, such as addictions and various diagnoses. Someone who signed the membership book at my church a couple years ago told me that she joined in large part simply because of how we treated one of our members who she could observe was struggling and special. Because we welcome these cracked pots, we are blessed to see the flowers. My congregation has even celebrated the regained strength and stability of some, even some whose lives were in terrifying disarray when they first arrived. Some of these are among our most reliable leaders today. For example, one of them told me her story in an email. 9 years ago, I showed up here unknown, was greeted warmly by someone who invited me to join a group going out for lunch after the service and to attend the spirituality circle the following Sunday, which I did. I felt welcomed and accepted, even though I was very reticent, could not engage in a conversation, and had almost no emotional affect due to the medications I was taking for my diagnosed mental disorder. I had been hospitalized 4 times in a year and a half, and they were very traumatic experiences for me. I had left my 13-year partnership, moved out of my home, and was living by myself, had no friends, had no job, had lost my 2 professions, had nearly no family support other than my 20-year-old son, had no self-confidence or even a sense of who I was or what I could believe in. I slept 12 hours a night and a couple-hour nap every day, and my mind was very foggy a lot of the time due to the medications. I had been told that I had a serious mental disorder that would grow increasingly worse and would have to be on medications the rest of my life. I considered suicide. No one knew my story when I walked through the doors of the church, yet many extended their caring to me, and later, when many learned of my story, their acceptance and compassion was even greater. I've come a long way since then, and with the approval of my psychiatrist, I will be off of all medications by the 2nd week in March. I am flourishing, and the welcome, acceptance, and caring that I receive from church members has helped me in my journey. How could anyone have told her she was anything less than beautiful? On the other hand, this ministry that our churches provide is demanding in time and emotion. Ministers and pastoral care associates, and really all who take the time to listen to the troubles of others, become more fully aware of the extent to which our churches serve as places of healing and hope for everyone, but especially for those dealing with mental illness. We listen, engage, and invite them into relationship. We invite ourselves into relationship. The them is the we, and the we is the them. And we know their families deeply appreciate our care for their loved ones. This ministry is demanding in other respects as well. When there are many chronically ill people, we sometimes can't find the time and emotional resources for the acutely ill. Even for those whose love and leadership have upheld the congregation practically forever, the latter need and deserve our care too. That's a challenge. Also, our very openness and acceptance can sometimes be our downfall. Therefore, we must have behavioral boundaries and lines of authority that promote a healthy sense of community. While one of our primary principles as Unitarian Universalists is our affirmation of the inherent worth and dignity of every person, we do not want to encourage self-centeredness or selfishness. Neither do we want selflessness, a kind of self-denial supposedly for the good of others. It seems to me that instead we want to be a community of self-full people, not selfish or selfless, but self-full. We want individuality, not individualism. Our congregations will be most healthy and the sense of community most deeply shared when each person is secure in ourselves and in our interconnections with each other. But we are all crackpots, not perfect. Congregational life depends on collective commitment to work things out together, to achieve commonly held goals and move toward a vision of who and what the congregation wants to be and how it wants to be and act in the world. This is what it means to be in covenant together. The American cultural glorification of individualism and consumerism has gotten in the way of covenantal communities. More recently, electronic friendships have become possible. Maintained in bits of time and snatches of phrases, they fit well into the crazy busyness of our lives, but they are not a substitute for the embodied friendships we can have in person here in our congregations. Here, where our bodies across the generations meet, where we make eye contact, shake hands, touch a shoulder, offer a hug, sing, pray, dance, laugh, and cry together, and sign up to serve the homeless, write letters to legislators, or march on behalf of our shared values. Our bodies get involved in these kind of places. True enough, healing and hope are offered to hearts, minds, and souls in tweets, emails, and posts, but healing and hope are most real when they happen in the actual, real, embodied presence of one another. The beloved community of your congregation, of our Unitarian Universalist congregations, is for all of us crackpots who promise to one another our mutual trust and support and covenant to relinquish our individualism, but not our individuality, for a common vision of the good we want to be for each other and the good we want to do in our beautiful but troubled world. We know that the flowers will bloom here along the path, and we rejoice in it. May it be so. Amen.